Hey, welcome to Your Turn. Mike Causey here. Delighted to have you with us, and we're going to have a really interesting show today. Probably our most popular guest, Tammy Flanagan. She of the best dates to retire and everything you need to know about retirement, but we're afraid to ask. And the subject today is Social Security. And I, to oversimplify it, I was talking about, as Socrates once said, do you want a bird in the hand or a turkey later on in the bush? And the bottom line is this. You're a federal worker. You're approaching the age when you will be eligible for Social Security. Do you take it right off the bat, or do you wait and let those payments increase? And they do increase dramatically. And the interesting thing to me, whenever I hear this debate, is that some people are more worried about not getting the maximum amount of money than they are about dying. Dying is secondary to the equation. So, Tammy, start us off on this.
Yeah, good morning, Mike. And I'm glad to be here to talk about this because there have been some recent changes to Social Security. So that's why I thought this would be a great topic to talk about 2 days before you can't make those changes anymore. So we'll get to those a little bit later. But this whole basic question about when to take Social Security never used to be an issue. You know, when our parents were taking Social Security, it was pretty much when they stopped working, you took Social Security. Because without it, you didn't have a retirement. You might have had a pension, but that wouldn't be enough to live on. You'd also need to have your Social Security benefit to supplement that pension. But today, it's a little bit different for several reasons. And I think one of the reasons is we now have retirement savings. So sometimes we think, well, maybe we can take more money out of those savings while we delay Social Security and then maybe cut back on how much we use of our savings later on. So that's one theory. Some people try to work the math numbers to see if that makes sense. Now, another reason perhaps that we wait, maybe think about waiting at least a little longer to take Social Security is because we might feel better at 62 than our grandparents did when they were 62. Yeah. We might want to continue working longer. We might want to do a lot more things that could be productive. So just the fact that we're still employed or making earned income, it might not be full-time, but even part-time can take the place of a Social Security check. So those are some common sense reasons why people delay the benefit. Number one, because they really don't need the money. They have other sources of income. And number two, they might be healthier than they were in the past generations and maybe can live long enough to beat the odds of, you know, getting a break-even point and then some. But the reality is the majority of people still take it when they stop working.
Yeah.
So we talk a lot about delaying it. We talk a lot about the math involved in waiting longer to take it. But the reality is, even today, when most people stop working, if they're already 62 or a little older than 62, that's generally when they take the benefit. So we're still seeing that same trend.
And how much does it increase if you delay it? Say I'm eligible at 62,
right,
and the benefit was $200 a month, $400 mm-hmm. a month. It increases dramatically, doesn't it?
It does. And a lot of it's based on what's called your full retirement age.
Yeah.
Now, we used to say the full retirement age was 65. Mm-hmm. You know, we always had that as the benchmark for Social Security. But then in the Reagan years, so this was like 30 years ago, mm-hmm. the law changed. So the full retirement age, even as we speak today, is gradually going up to 67.
Yeah.
So if your full retirement age, let's just say it's right there in the middle, it's 66. If your full retirement age is 66, then you take the benefit at 62, you're taking a 25% reduction for the rest of your life. It's a permanent reduction. So you'll either take a smaller check at 62 and get that for the rest of your time, or you'll take the full benefit at 66 and get that bigger check for the rest of your days. But guess what? You're going to die on the same date no matter when you started.
Right,
so
right.
The question becomes, you know, how much is that total that you've received over that period of time?
And is there a percentage amount that it goes up each year you delay it?
It does. Now, it's easier to calculate that if you delay it past age 66 or your full retirement age. So the amount you go up after age 66 or after your full retirement age is 8% a year. However, the amount that it's reduced per year when you're younger than your full benefit age is not the same exact amount every year. Mm-hmm. Like it might be 3.5% for this year to this year, and then it might go up to 5%.
Yeah.
So it's a little more graduated for those earlier years because of that moving full retirement
age. Now, you said at the beginning, you said on Friday? What happens Friday?
So before April 29th, if you're at your full retirement age, so those listeners who are already 66 or past age 66, they have an option that's kind of a strategy, especially for married couples. It's called file and suspend your benefit. Now, if you file and suspend, that means you're filing for your own earned benefit, your own Social Security benefit, but you're telling Social Security you don't want it. So like I'm 66, let's say, and I file for benefits, but I'm not going to take it. I tell them to hold on to it. And I'm going to pick up those delayed credits, those 8% increases by waiting. Now, you might say, why would somebody do that? Why not just wait till you're 70 and file in the first place? Mm-hmm. Well, the reason people do it is because they may be married and their spouse wants to claim a benefit on your work record. So if I file and suspend, my husband could say, well, I'm 66 and I could file on your work record instead of my own. And then I'll take half of yours, even though you're letting yours grow. So it was a strategy for married couples to say, while I'm waiting for that bigger check, me or my spouse, one of the two of us, could be claiming half of the other's benefit. So it lets you collect 50% of your spouse's benefit while you're letting your own benefit grow. Now, if you're not going to file and suspend before this Friday, you're never going to do it because mm-hmm. the deadline is this week. Now, some people say, well, I've been calling Social Security all week and it's you know, on hold and everybody's calling because they want to know more about this. Well, as long as you get your request in for an appointment, even if you don't get your appointment till June, they're going to leave some concessions for people who were qualified before that date to go ahead and make the application.
Would a verb, if I did get them on the phone and I said, can I have an appointment? And they said, yeah, June. Will that be noted somewhere? I mean, if it's not noted,
yeah, there's
then I'm
some
in trouble,
new. Right? I was looking through some of the. It's almost like training materials that Social Security provides their offices for giving information, and that's the read that I got on that. So again, that's coming.
You just hope they don't lose the notation.
That's right,
right.
Or hopefully they put it in some computer.
Okay, that's
file. Amazing.
Now, so today is Wednesday, April 27th, and the deadline for this. What do you call it? File and suspend is Friday,
the
29th, 2016. So
exactly.
Okay.
That's coming up quick.
If you're hearing this 5 years from today, you're in trouble. But
yeah, now that's not the only thing that's changing.
Wow. Okay.
Another thing's changing. The other thing that's changing, this applies to people who were 62 years old before January 2nd of this year. So if you're already 62 and you've been 62 since January 1st or earlier, what you have the ability to do is something called filing a restricted application. So this kind of goes hand in hand with this file and suspend. So again, let's say that I was 62 and I've been 62, let's say since January 1st is my birthday, by the way. So if that's the case, although I wasn't 62.
Uh-huh.
So if I was 62 on January 1st, then I could wait until I reach my full retirement age, which let's say is 66. Mm-hmm. I can't do it now, but I can wait till I'm 66. And then I could file, but only restrict my application to my spouse's work record, thus letting my own benefit grow and pick up those 8% credits. But you know, you have to be 62 before this year, but you can't do it when you're 62. You have to wait till your full retirement age. So it's a little complicated. And again, it's two different things that are changing. It's not going to really have a major impact on those people who want to stop working and claim benefits, because you can still do that.
You know, I'm always suspicious of these, a specific date cutoff,
right?
Because I know how they work on the Hill, and frequently it will be January 2nd as opposed to January 1st or January the 9th, because it's somebody's birthday or somebody that the member of Congress or the person that's writing the bill for them on the Hill, it benefits them. So I'm always suspicious of that. And you know, this one, April 29th. Why April 29th?
It's actually the deadline's April 3rd. 30th, but it's the day that your benefit becomes
payable. But then why the 30th?
April?
Why not the whole year or something?
That's a good question. I'm not sure what that has to do with.
Well, I know in one instance, and this goes back some time, but a member of Congress had the federal retirement law written, the FERS program, I think. He had several ex-wives, and he wanted to cut one of them out of the loop, but not the others, and it was tailor-made for him. So
be
suspicious of these specific dates. We're talking with Tammy Flanagan here. She's and Tammy's going to be doing a webinar tomorrow, Thursday, correct?
That's right.
For NARF?
Yep, for the National Active and Retired Federal Employees Association, and it's a webinar on this topic of claiming Social Security, not just the recent changes, but just in general. You know, what do you think about when you're trying to decide between 62 and 70?
How does somebody sign up for that?
They can just go to narfe.org, N-A-R-F-E, www.ecosystemsolutions.org. And right on the homepage, you will see the webinar link. And just click on there. Now, you have to be a member of NARF. So if you're not a member of NARF, you can join for about $40 a year, which includes all the webinars I've done.
Great
and
magazine.
NARF magazine.
Their Retirement Life magazine is absolutely excellent.
Exactly.
I get it and love it. Going to take a short break here, talking with Tammy Flanagan. We'll be right back here on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Your Turn. It's Mike Causey here, and I'm talking with Tammy Flanagan. She is an expert in all things retirement. And Tammy, you're doing private consulting now, correct?
I have started doing that this year. I'm always trying to find ways to kind of rewire myself.
Yeah.
Because, you know, as I tell my employees when we teach the classes, I talk about planning for your life after retirement.
Yeah.
Now it's like I'm there because my husband
yeah.
retired last year, and I'm trying to figure out where do I fit into his retirement versus the fact I've been doing retirement benefits now for about 30 years, just getting good at it. So I don't want to quit yet.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, how do I keep going? So I thought one thing I can do from wherever I am is do some consulting. So I am taking on some clients. It's very time consuming, so I don't take that many on. So, but I do that on occasion. Right now I'm booking clients in September.
Well, I hope you're charging plenty because of the expertise. I was talking to a financial planner who's mm-hmm. nationally known. In fact, he was on the show a couple of times this year,
right.
And he's nationally known. And I asked him how he did it, and he said he does it on a fee basis.
Right.
So it means, you know, consulting. And he said, the problem is I'm so good and I'm so well known that I have to charge a lot of money. And
yeah.
of course,
well, I look at it from the standpoint of at first I used to think, well, I'm only charging for 60 minutes when I talk to you.
Yeah.
But I soon realized that I have to review all your information to know who I'm talking to. And then after we're done talking, you want a summary and a to-do list and a follow-up. So I usually spend about 5 or 6 hours with each client.
I'm sure. Yeah. And classic. Everybody walks in and says, my case is very simple. And
right.
You handed me one here where the guy's got like 35 bullet points, including more than we want to know about certain medicines.
Right.
Taking.
And that guy doesn't want to pay for help. He just wants a simple
absolutely.
Answer to a complicated question.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you were having a webinar tomorrow, Thursday, for
right.
NARF, the National Active and Retired Federal Employees. And I believe you said just go to NARF.org. And if you're a member, you're in. And if you're not a NARF member, you can sign up. It's something like $40 a year.
Right.
And you get not only things like this for free, but you get the COLA countdown. You get the excellent magazine,
mm-hmm.
which is just, I literally look forward to reading their magazine.
Well, so. I have to say, like between you and NARF, when I first started in the retirement mm-hmm. counseling back when I worked in the government, that's how I learned what I needed to do. I read your column every day, and I read Retirement Life magazine. And
I probably stole it from NARF.
Probably where I learned 95% of what
deal.
I know.
Okay, I'm looking at this spread that you've prepared for the NARF webinar tomorrow. And you've got one of them here says, what is your retirement timeline? And it looks like a ruler, except
mm-hmm.
1, 2, 3, 4. It's got 55, 62, 65-67, 70, and 90.
Mm-hmm.
Which you have listed as the expiration date. But what does that chart mean?
Well, I got the idea to do that by watching Dr. Phil.
Uh-huh.
I was watching an episode of Dr. Phil, and what he put up on the stage was a ruler, like a tape measure. And it started out at 0, and it went to about 90.
Yeah.
And he asked a member of whoever was guest that day to stand on the ruler at their age.
Oh, where are you now?
And look forward to see how much time you have
mm-hmm.
left, and then look behind you to see how much time has already gone back.
Excellent. Yeah.
So what I was thinking of here was the fact that as a federal employee who is thinking about retirement, you're thinking, well, probably somewhere between 55 and 62 is generally when a lot of federal employees think about retirement. So when you do that, okay, so I'm younger than my age for Social Security, so now I face this other timeline of 62 to 70. I've got this 8-year window of when do I file for Social Security. You know, one of the nice things that we've liked about FERS, the newer retirement
mm-hmm.
system, is the fact that we have more control over how we take our benefits. You know,
yeah.
we get our FERS retirement, that government pension, but we don't necessarily have to take Social Security at the same time. And then we have control over how much we withdraw from the Thrift Savings Plan. So given that control of how we take that stream of income in retirement, it is worth giving it some thought. But I think it still boils down to the fact that Social Security was designed as an actuarial benefit.
Yeah.
And so what I mean by saying that is that whether you take the smaller check at 62 or you take the much bigger check at 70, and that could be $1,000 a month difference in the benefit, but whether you do it early or you do it late, if you die at 90, you're still going to get about the same amount of money. You're going to come out ahead if you make it all the way to 90 because the break-even age is around 81. But we don't know that. You know, we don't know if we're going to make it all the way to 90 or if we're going to go at 63. So I think it still boils down to, do you need the money? Are you still working? Are you married? Because sometimes a spouse's income can affect when you take Social Security. So, you know, are you still working? Do you need the money? How long are you going to live? Which, of course, we don't know. And are, is someone else depending on your income? And if you can answer those four questions, that's going to give you a good clue as to when to take your benefit.
Yeah. A lot of people don't like the word entitlement, but many people consider Social Security is something they are entitled to. And the argument they make is, it's my money. I paid for it. Well, not so, correct? I mean, you, depending on when you, how long you've been working, but you, you paid in X amount of money. But typically, people get back all the money they put in in 3 or 4 years.
That's right. And keep in mind, entitlement's one word, but if you're going to use that, there's a couple other words to understand. One is insurance. Because if you think of FICA, we all pay the FICA tax, that's Federal Insurance Contributions Act, which means we're insuring, we're buying insurance against the loss of income due to our death, disability, or retirement. And some people don't get benefits from Social Security because they die early, but maybe their family members get benefits based on your work record.
Right. And this was a New Deal idea,
Roosevelt.
Concept. And it was never designed to be a retirement plan for people. It is definitely a supplement. So, somebody once referred to it, can't say the words now, but cigarette money. You know, it was just for extras, but you were supposed to set aside something for a rainy day and for retirement yourself.
Right. And I think another word that we associate with Social Security is tax, because we pay the FICA tax or the OASDI tax, the Old Age Survivors and Disability Insurance Tax. And so when we pay taxes, we don't necessarily do it for our own best interests. It's for the greater good. You know, we pay school taxes even if we don't have kids.
Right.
It's the same thing with Social Security. I think entitlement is because we have paid into it. We think we are entitled. We have earned an entitlement to get a benefit. But there's no guarantee how much it's going to be.
Well, I saw someone would almost fit you, their profile, and they showed me their record, and they had put in something like $110,000 in contributions over the years. And that sounds like a lot of money, and it is a lot of money. But when you figure what you can get back after 3, 4, 5 years.
You get $30,000 a year, you get your $100,000 back in 3 or 4 years.
Okay. I'm looking at your NARF webinar that's coming up tomorrow, and you've got something here, an audience poll. And
it's a question for the audience to find out, you know, when they plan to collect Social Security. So when we do this webinar, I'm going to be interested to find out what people really think. You know, it's
this
one thing to read an article about delaying it, but it's another thing to say, what am I really going to do?
Exactly. This one said, the question you have here is, what, when do you plan to claim Social Security retirement benefits? One, I'm already getting them. Two, as soon as I'm eligible. Three, I plan to delay application as long as possible, as we said, to, to get a bigger benefit. I'm not yet eligible for Social Security retirement. I'm not sure, which I think maybe
probably
a
the
lot
majority.
Of people,
yeah, that's why they're listening to the webinar, right? I think it's always that question, like, I'm not sure, because I read all these articles. I could print out probably enough to fill your office of articles just on claiming Social Security, especially in recent years, since we do have retirement savings, we have investments, we work longer. So there's a lot of reasons to think about delaying the benefit. But I think for many people, it still boils down to, get it while the getting's good. I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. What if I die and I never get my first check? So I think some people live in that fear of saying, well, it is my entitlement, so I'm going to go ahead and take it when I can.
Yeah. And again, it just strikes me as not humorous, but funny that some people are worried more about missing out on something than they are about the reason they'll miss out on it, which is being dead. Full retirement age, you said earlier, for a long time it was 65 was the full age.
That's right.
You could get it at 62, but that's changed, as you said, over the years. It probably helped save Social Security, too, because people are living longer and working longer. But what are the full retirement ages now? How do you know?
Yeah, well, if you were born way back when, like my dad was born in 1919, his full retirement age would have still been 65. But for the baby boom generation, this group of people born between 1943 and 1954, if you were born during that time, that means you turned 62 this year or earlier, your full retirement age is 66. Now, if you're born after 1954, every year it goes up 2 months until we get to 67. So anybody born in 1960 or later, their full retirement age right now is 67. And I say right now because as we look at Social Security and as you read your statements, there's always that bold print item that's on a Social Security statement, which says, Congress has made changes to the law in the past and can do so at any time. So we wonder, what can Congress change about our Social Security? How will that impact us? And one of the things that's always on the table is saying, well, we are living longer, we are working longer, so why not increase that full benefit age from 67 to 70? So we worry that that could happen. But I think the other thing to keep in mind is when Congress has made changes in the past, as they certainly have, they've grandfathered in many of those changes, saying that if you were born before a certain date, you won't be affected. And remember that somebody born in 1954 becomes eligible this year for their Social Security benefit.
Interesting.
You could almost put money on the fact that Congress wouldn't change the age for someone who's born in 1954 or earlier.
Yeah. Okay. But need to take a short break here.
Later.
Talk to you, Tammy Flanagan, benefits expert. We'll be right back here on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here. I'm talking with Tammy Flanagan. She's a benefits expert and is now doing private consulting. And tomorrow, that's Thursday, April 28th, she's going to be doing a webinar for NARF, the National Active and Retired Federal Employees. And if you're a NARF member, you can go to their website, narf.org, and sign up. And if you're not a member, you can join NARF, and that makes you eligible for these and other things, including the magazine and the good lobbying job NARF does. So certainly well worth looking at. Tammy, I'm looking at your syllabus here for your webinar tomorrow, and got a true false. I love these things, particularly when other people are taking it.
Right.
True false. I plan to continue to work after age 62. Mm-hmm. I can afford to retire without Social Security. There is longevity in my family, and I'm healthy. I am good at math. Well, I'm out of that. I am married. Now, what's the point of those?
Okay, so those five questions, and I was thinking to myself, like, what would cause someone to want to take it early versus someone who might be a person who would consider delaying it? So if you answered those five questions true, or most of them is true, you know, I do plan to continue working after 62. I could afford to retire without claiming Social Security. My family tends to live a long time. I live a healthy lifestyle. I'm pretty good at figuring things out. I'm good at math. And maybe I'm married, which could be another factor in this. So if you're saying, yeah, most of that's true about me, then you might be one of these people who want to think about delaying Social Security. Because if you're still working at 62, remember there's an earnings limit. So if you're making earned income over $15,720 this year, you're going to have to give part of your check back anyway, if not all of it. Because for every $2 you earn above that limit, you lose a dollar of your benefit if you've claimed it. Now, that earnings test goes away when you reach that magic full retirement age. Then you can make as much as you want and claim the benefit. But if you're working at 62, then you might as well delay at least until your working wages go down to below that $15,720.
Now, of those five questions, and I'm not trying to be funny here, but of those five, I'm not good at math, and I'm no longer married.
Right.
So what do I look at then?
Yeah. So in your case, you know, here you are still working,
yeah,
right? So right there, we have to look at your age, which of course you're only 39.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
So, but if you were 66 or older, then you might say, well, I'm already at that point where I'm at my full benefit age. Now, does it make sense to delay it even further till 70? Because you could take it or you could wait. So let's look at the next one. Well, I can afford to retire without Social Security. Well, hey, maybe I plan to work till I'm 70. So yeah, I could afford to you know, delay it because I'm still employed. So then the third one that you said true is there's longevity in my family and I'm healthy. Well, I know looking at you and walking with you, you're healthier than me. I think you walk at a good clip. So therefore, I think it makes sense for someone like you to delay it.
Okay.
For common sense reasons. Yeah. It has nothing to do with financial planning, just common sense.
I wish I had talked to you
before.
A while ago, yeah. Here's another one. I don't plan to work past age 62.
Right.
So Social Security is one part of the three parts of FERS. You have Social Security, you have the FERS annuity, and you have a thrift savings plan money. You better have it.
Right.
And the Social Security is an actuarial benefit. Do you want a smaller benefit for more years or a larger benefit for fewer years? And that's a good question.
Right. And if you think of that as, when we think of the old civil service system where you got basically one check, right?
Mm-hmm.
That might have replaced anywhere from 60 to maybe 80% of your income.
Right.
Well, to get that same income replacement under FERS for the same length of career, you're going to need three checks. Not just FERS and Thrift Savings Plan, but you also need Social Security to equal that same lifetime stream of income. So I think we still have people today who don't want to delay Social Security because they don't want to have to take all that extra money out of their TSP account to make up for the piece that they still need. So I still think there's something to be said for claiming it when you turn 62 or when you stop working if it's a little bit past 62.
Okay. And another graph on your syllabus here is I plan to work past age 62.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean?
Yeah, so if you work past age 62, just like I was saying with your example, you make too much money to get Social Security anyway if you're under the full retirement age.
Yeah.
If you're over the full retirement age and you're still working, you probably don't really need it.
Mm-hmm.
So then the question is, what would you do with it if you took it? Would you spend it and expand your lifestyle, or would you invest it?
Yeah.
Now, if you invest it, then we got to do some math.
Yeah, good point. And, you know, I know someone, both retired feds, both very well off, a very high grade, and they use their Social Security, and they delayed taking it, but they use their Social Security to fly first class.
Sure.
You know, and that's not a bad way to do it.
Yes.
They worked hard all their lives. They have reason to travel a lot over in Europe, particularly. Mm-hmm. And they say, hey, this is one for me. I owe myself.
Well, little variation on that story. When my husband retired 8 years ago from his government
first job,
career, from where he didn't pay into Social Security under the old retirement system, he had 22 credits of coverage. So I thought to myself,
40,
and we talked about this, you need 40 credits to qualify. So I was hoping he would plan to work under Social Security long enough at least to get those 40 credits, which he did. And of course, his Social Security benefit is not huge.
Yeah.
It's not going to be a big source of income for us.
Yeah.
But number one, it's going to cover the cost of Medicare Part B.
Yeah.
And number two, it may not pay for first class tickets, but it'll be, you know, the money we go to the movies on Sunday or the money that we can spend on things that we otherwise might have thought we better not do that because we have a fixed income.
Right.
So for CSRS retirees, they can still get Social Security, but it's not going to necessarily be a big part of their retirement income.
Yeah.
But hey, you've worked for it. Like you said, it's an entitlement.
Uh-huh.
You might as well take advantage of getting something rather than nothing.
Yeah. Well, and that maybe is a good point to talk about the WEP, the windfall elimination provision. And I remember the 10, 12 years ago when it was a big deal and it was a nightmare to write about, to understand it, to explain it, to even comprehend it. So what is the windfall elimination?
Well, I always love, and I say this in my seminars too, and I give you credit for it because you've called them the evil twins, right? There's the WEP and there's the GPO.
Yeah.
And they're two different things. And again, this kind of ties in with NARF too, because you mentioned NARF does lobbying. So I always love when you have like Jessica Clement, who's the NARF legislative director, because the executive director of NARF was just up on Capitol Hill last week or this week lobbying Congress about the elimination or at least the reduction of the effects of the WEP and the GPO. And we've talked about this for 30 years, how this every year this proposal comes up to get rid of the WEP or reduce the GPO. And this year it's getting some momentum. It's getting some steam. So we really feel hopeful that this lobbying effort might pay off. And my theory behind that is thinking, okay, this law has been around for 30 years in the case of the WEP and longer than 30 years in the case of the GPO.
Which is government pension offset.
Government pension GPO. Offset. So these are both things that affect people under the old retirement system.
Yeah.
It reduces either your own Social Security benefit or the one your spouse may have earned for you. Well, you figure if this affects people who have been retired for 30 years, guess where some of those people are right now?
Yeah,
they're probably 6 feet under.
Yeah.
So perhaps if Congress did make that positive change to help those remaining retirees, that would win some favor.
It's almost like giving a benefit to World War II vets.
Yeah.
There aren't many of them. They're dying at the rate of 1,100 a day.
Exactly.
So, I did talk to Jessica Clement the other day, mm-hmm. and she wanted to get into this, the windfall elimination thing, and she is going to be on the show in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, listen to what she has to say, because it's really interesting, especially if you're affected by either of those provisions. These provisions affect people under the civil service system.
Yeah.
Can also affect people under state and local governments where they didn't pay Social Security taxes, but they get a benefit from work where they didn't pay into it, like civil service, state pensions, and local government. So in that case, when it comes to the WEP or the windfall elimination provision, it affects the Social Security benefit you've earned for yourself, like my husband. You know, he had his 22 credits. Now he has his 40 credits. So even though he's qualified, he's not going to get the full general formula benefit. They're going to modify the formula for him, because otherwise, if they didn't, they'd be treating him like a lifetime low wage earner.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's something people don't understand. You retire under civil service or even a state benefit where you don't pay into Social Security, and you get a relatively high annuity from the government, and then you have a low earnings, minimal earnings under Social Security, maybe when you were a kid, maybe when you were starting out, or part-time job after you retire. And so you go to Social Security, and because of the welfare tilt, you get more back than someone who's paid in a lot longer.
That's exactly right. Yeah, the Social Security system has always been tilted to provide more replacement income for low wage earners, less replacement income for high wage earners, with the theory being that if you made a higher wage, you should have had money left over to save for your retirement, and lower wage earners live paycheck to paycheck, couldn't save for retirement. So that's still the theory today.
Yeah, it
but
is.
But with the WEP, it's a little tilted a different way.
Yeah, and you know, just the very fact that you call it windfall, mm-hmm. I mean, that tells you what Congress was thinking back in the day when
you were getting a windfall.
Imposed this, okay. Yeah. All right, let's see, we've got time for a quickie here for the next break. Oh, here's the one, I plan to work past age 62. So the other one was, you didn't plan to work. So this one, I plan to work past 62. What are the factors there?
Well, the one thing is, for anybody in general, there's no longer an earnings limit with Social Security. So you could actually claim your benefit and continue working no matter how much money you make. And in that case, like you said, your friends, you know, booked first class tickets, or you can invest the money if you don't really need it. So there's something to be said for go ahead and still claiming it, even though you're still working. But again, you could argue it might make sense to delay it since you don't necessarily need the money to live on. One more thing about working past age 62 to speak to the civil service group is the fact that if they do have their 40 credits and they're still working under CSRS when they're 66 or 67, as long as you're not collecting that civil service retirement, the WEP doesn't apply to you yet. It only affects people who are getting a pension from work not covered by Social Security. So that's one of those situations where you can get more from Social Security while you're working and then less after you retire, because that's when the windfall provision kicks in.
Good note to end on. We need to take a short break here. We will be right back here on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here, and I'm talking with Tammy, planning and benefits expert. And Tammy, I can't believe we've known each other 30 plus years.
I know. I've known you longer than you've known me.
Yeah. Time flies when you're having fun.
Yeah.
A guy came in yesterday with the station manager, and he said, I remember you writing about the Hayes Tilden dispute, Rutherford B. Hayes and Samuel Tilden.
Not quite that far.
Not quite that long, but you've talked about WEP, the windfall elimination provision, mm-hmm. and the other, the GPO in Washington means government printing office,
right.
but to federal workers, it's government pension offset.
Right.
What's that all about?
Yeah, that's a provision of the law that actually took effect in 1978. And it's kind of interesting if you think about the backstory behind that. Because back in the 30s, you know, when mm-hmm. Roosevelt signed into law Social Security, the 40s, the 50s, if you were a woman and you were married, where did you work?
Yeah, nowhere.
Right. Yeah. You were dependent financially on your husband. So Social Security had a benefit that originally was called the dependent wife's benefit. Well, the years went by and, of course, you know, women went to work. And then also in the 1970s, men were saying, wait a minute. Why is it a dependent wife's benefit? Maybe I didn't work outside the home, or maybe for whatever reason, my wife's benefit is bigger than mine because she did work at higher wages. So now it's this spousal benefit. But in the 1970s, when men started to be able to claim that spousal benefit, there was a huge group of men who were married to women who paid into Social Security, but these men didn't have much Social Security of their own. Guess who they were? Federal employees.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah, and civil service, 1970s.
That's right, they didn't have any.
Yeah, men weren't paying in, but they may have had a wife who did. So all of a sudden, these men who were civil servants became eligible for spousal benefits from Social Security.
Oh, yeah.
So Congress said, well, we didn't mean those men to Social Security. So they put into law this offset, the government pension offset, that said, okay, you can still file for spousal benefits, but we're going to offset your entitlement to that benefit by 2/3 of your government pension. And I really think that was directed to the men because it was mostly men in high-level government positions back then. But over the last 30, 40 years since that took effect, today it's mostly women who are devastatingly affected by that because more often than not, it's a woman who might take 20 years out to raise her family.
Yeah.
So her Social Security is not going to be that great. So she's still kind of a quasi-dependent spouse. And when you have that short 20-year federal career and you get a civil service pension, but then you offset your entitlement to either a spouse or a widow's benefit by 2/3 of that government pension, guess what? You don't get it. And so therefore, that's the one that I really think is more unfair than the windfall because of the way it does affect not only women, some men, but mostly women. As far as becoming still that dependent spouse, yet not being able to claim that Social Security benefit their spouse had earned for them.
You know, and that shows you, too, and this shocks younger people. It's like seeing movies where everybody smokes. They can't believe it. But when I met my ex-wife, she was working for the FBI. And later on, nothing to do with me, but later on, she joined the newspaper that I was working for. Now, I was working there as a private contractor, so I wasn't part of their benefits. So she went down to the HR office and said, I want to get a family health plan and for my husband and I. And they said, well, why doesn't he get it? And she explained that I was a private contractor. And in effect, they told her, no, you married a bum. That I married a bum. She married a bum. You know, I wasn't eligible. So I did not have health insurance and she did. So that has certainly changed.
That has changed.
Hey, this longevity factor thing that you have in your NARF webinar is absolutely fascinating. Person's lifespan is thought to be largely determined by the combined effects of genetics and environmental factors. However, you say, twin studies suggest genetics only account for approximately 20 to 30% of an individual's chances of surviving to age 85. Mm-hmm. So, wow.
So that can go either way.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So if you really take care of yourself, like in my case, my mother smoked. She was a heavy smoker. She was way overweight. Not way overweight. I shouldn't
but
say
over.
That, but she was overweight. Yep. And so she only lived to 74.
Uh-huh.
So genetics might say, well, you know, I've got maybe a good, 10 or 12 years left. But then on the other hand, I've never smoked.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to maintain my weight, although I would say I am overweight. But still, I try to do things to help maintain my health. I walk and so forth. So maybe that environmental factor, the fact that I try to take care of myself, hopefully would let me live a little longer.
Oh, and, you just look at people. And, my grandmother looked like, Nina Khrushchev, And now you see grandmothers everywhere that don't.
That's right.
Okay, here, I am good at math. Well, I should skip that one. What's the difference, not good at math versus I'm good at math?
Well, sometimes when I write about this idea of delaying Social Security, you'll get comments, you know, like you get comments on your column and people write about that and say, well, if you divide the factor of X, Y, Z and add the present value factor and you go into all those algorithms and calculations, which are beyond my pay grade as well, you could probably argue either way to take it at 62 or to delay it till 70, depending on how you work the problem. But if you're saying, well, I think there's something to this delaying it, but I'm really not good at figuring that out. I don't know the algorithm to do that. Then maybe you want to sit down with a financial advisor who does have a software program who can show you, here's what happens if you do it this way, and here's what happens if you do it that way. And there are, in fact, most financial planners now do factor Social Security claiming into the whole picture of your retirement, looking at everything, looking at all your investments. Are you still working? You know, what's your life expectancy? Are you married? Does your spouse have a Social Security? There's a lot of moving parts. There's a lot of variables. So for any mere mortal without the software, it's very hard to really come up with a pinpoint, this is your best date.
You know what I used to find interesting? I walked to work when I was working for the Washington Post. I walked to work literally every day of my life, rain, snow, sleet. And I walked past the Social Security office, and it was, of course, full of people. And it always struck me as weird that everybody in that was working for Social Security was not under it.
Right, exactly.
Their clients were all under employees. It. And it just seemed very strange that happened. Of course, that has changed now. You mentioned one thing. We're talking about the three-legged stool of FERS, the Federal Employees Retirement System. It's the civil service annuity, which is about half what you'd get under the CSRS. There is the Social Security component, which people under CSRS don't get. Based on their government service,
right.
And the all important one is the thrift savings plan.
That's right. That can make or break it.
Well, when I remember when it was set up, the experts and they were doing this to create a model retirement plan, and they said this thrift savings plan, the money in it is going to provide anywhere from 30% to 50% of someone's income in retirement. Now that's a big chunk.
It could
30 to 50.
Yeah, depends on your age when you start taking it out. Depends on how you're invested, whether you're all in the G fund or you're diversified between all five funds. So depending on the future performance, depending on your life expectancy, you can take anywhere from 3 to 4% withdrawals without running out of money for the next 30 years. So you figure someone, and there are thousands of people who have saved $500,000 or up to $1 million in there after 30-year career. They can take out anywhere from maybe $20,000 to as much as $40,000 a year income added to their Social Security and their FERS benefits.
Right.
So it could be half of
it. And we've had several financial planners, Arthur Stein, Alan Roth, and whatnot, and they all say have stocks even when you're retired.
That's right.
You still need stocks for growth. Exactly.
That's so, right.
And again, a reminder, Tammy is doing a webinar tomorrow for NARF, the National Active and Retired Federal Employees, and it'll be, you log into NARF.org at 2 o'clock. Okay,
yep.
Log into NARF.org. If you're a NARF member, boom, you're in. If you're not a member, you can join. They'll take you on the spot, and that's a good deal all around. I think we're about out of time here. Tammy, I certainly appreciate you coming in. And later on, coming up in a couple of weeks, going to have you back, and we'll be talking about the best age to retire, which is everybody's.
That's our famous.
Everybody's.
That's how
favorite.
We got to know each other.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Right. Okay. Thank you very much, Tammy Flanagan. Thank you for being with us, and we'll see you here next week, everybody.